I'm Gillian Creasy. I'm a local city councillor. I've been asked to chair this meeting. So my job is just to say thank you very much to the people who've organised it, Kath and Jonathan and Sheffield CND. I think the facilities are fairly obvious, that there's toilets out there and there's fire exits here. I think the plan is that Bruce is going to speak for half an hour or so.
Max.
And then have a little chance for people to speak amongst themselves about their concerns and questions. And then half an hour or so of questions. That's the plan for the meeting. So my job really is to introduce Bruce Kent, who I'm sure most people in the room have heard of, know, have met, have heard speak before. But Bruce Kent is Vice President of National CND. This is the last day of a 30-day tour, is it? 30-day tour of the country, persuading this country that it's time to cut Trident. It's been time to cut Trident for a very long time, but we keep saying it, and it will happen. I think that's it. I shall hand over to Bruce.
Thank you very much indeed.
Yes, it is the last day. It's kind of the end of school term for me. We started on the 30th of March, and it's been very interesting indeed. I think we've done about 3 meetings a day on average during that period. Not away every night, away 2 nights a week, but going out from London as well. It's been very interesting. And there's 2 things that I've got in mind. One is to talk about Trident, and the other is what you can do to help stop people spending £100 billion on Trident. So it's the facts and the campaign. I should say that I'm deeply sympathetic to anybody who feels themselves that they've got hard of hearing. I hope you can hear me at the back because I'm raising my voice as best I can. Because some time ago I realised that I was losing my hearing. And it dawned on me one day when a lady came up to me and she said, Bruce Kent, I'm amazed that you're getting so obese. And I thought, how bloody rude. So I said to my dear wife, what did that woman say? Oh, she said, dear Bruce, I'm so interested to see that you're still concerned with peace. With which I went and got some National Health hearing aids, which more or less work and occasionally whistle and sometimes don't work at all. But anyway, there we are. Very kind of you to come along. In the middle of the 80s, any talk on nuclear weapons would have produced hundreds of people. But we have now the cream of the crop, people who've been faithful and consistent and still at it. I had in the park where I was sitting in the sunshine this afternoon here in Sheffield, a man took a very long look at me and said, you look like Bruce Kent. So I thought, yeah, well, that's quite possible. I talked to him about that. But it's very odd when you begin to go out of the public focus. It was on the underground not long ago. There was a man and his wife reading a newspaper. They had the newspaper up. And you can always tell when they're talking about you because they're looking around the newspaper. And finally, this man came over and said, I'm really embarrassed to have to ask you this. My wife insists I ask you, who were you when you were important? Anyway, we're all important, and there's always things we can do. And I really bring good news in one sense, not specifically about Trident, but how one little group of people can do something useful. And I heard before I came away the day before yesterday that the Marshall Islands, and there are not more than 60,000 residents in the various Marshall Islands, and they were the scene of many nuclear tests in the 50s and 60s, and suffered very much radiation and pollution and all that sort of. The Marshall Islands have now taken out a court case in the International Court of Justice against the 9 nuclear powers. And what are they saying? They're saying the 9 nuclear powers have a legal obligation to negotiate the abolition of all nuclear weapons in good faith. And they're not doing that in good faith because they're all renewing their nuclear weapons. And they are. We're not the only ones in this country. And I think it's fantastic that a tiny little place like the Marshall Islands will take it on. It's not the first time that a little country has put up 2 fingers to the major powers. There was a little country called Vanuatu. Well, of course, there still is. And they had a minister of health called Hilda Lini sometime in the 80s. and Hilda Lini was a member of the United Nations World Health Organization, where no veto applies, as it doesn't apply on any of the sub-organizations of the UN. And she had the bright idea of getting the World Health Organization to ask the International Court for a ruling about the legality of nuclear weapons. And so she brought it to the agenda of the World Health Organization. There was pandemonium by the nuclear powers who were on the World Health Organization. The Americans actually said that nuclear weapons are not a health issue. Well, I don't know what they thought they would be, but anyway, they tried to, but it didn't work. We got the vote, got a very good ruling out of the World Court, 99% entirely on our side, that they're illegal to possess and to threaten to use, and certainly illegal to use. So small people can do big things. And I think that's a lesson for all of us. You never know how things are going to work. I'm here specifically to talk about Trident and the possibilities of getting rid of Trident and some of the facts about Trident. Many of you will know them all, but I'll go through quite briefly. I've got one eye on the clock. It's a wonderful Quaker meeting house. They always have clocks. It tells you how and when to stop talking. And I will be stopping within the half hour. The basic position at the moment is we have nine nuclear countries, countries with nuclear weapons, nine, the traditional big five, plus Israel, plus Pakistan, plus India, plus perhaps North Korea. We're not sure whether they have them or not. That's the score. We have now operational in the world 17,000 nuclear warheads, which of course is an improvement on what we once had. There were 60,000. But I just call that good housekeeping, because it doesn't matter to me whether you've got one nuclear weapon, 10 nuclear weapons, or 500 nuclear weapons. You can devastate the world with one of them, let alone the whole shebang. So I think there's been some good housekeeping, but none of the nuclear powers are serious about abolishing nuclear weapons. In fact, any statement that comes from them always got the word eventually. We believe in the eventual elimination of nuclear weapons, sometime in the far distance, with the second coming or something in Perusia or somewhere other, in the far distance, but not here and now, no way. In fact, our country, astonishingly, actually voted with three other countries against a proposal from the General Assembly to set up a United Nations negotiating body, which doesn't exist at the moment. The Committee of Disarmament is the one, the nuclear powers, and a UN body to negotiate. Four countries voted against: Britain, the United States, Russia, and France. I think China abstained or voted for, I'm not sure, but only four. So four out of 192 countries are the roadblock. And when you hear people, politicians, saying, oh, we are serious about multilateral negotiations, rubbish. They don't know what they're talking about. We are not serious about them at all. We're keen on good housekeeping arrangements, don't test in the atmosphere and so on, but getting rid of them, no, we're not interested in that at all. Now, the Trident issue is very interesting. How do we come to get Trident? Well, Trident was actually something that Mrs. Thatcher and Lord Carrington and John Knott were not very keen on in 1979. And I've got the minute of a meeting in about December of 1979. They were talking about the renewal of Trident, the first Trident, the one we've got now. And they were all saying, oh, well, it's too expensive. We can't continue. We should stop this. Cold War was over. We should stop this. And then somebody introduced and said, but excuse me, but if we do that, the French will be the only ones in Europe with an independent nuclear weapon. Oh, my God. Complete change of argument. Oh, well, if the French, then we're going to have them as well. And that's just about as crude as the thinking in favor of nuclear weapons for this country is. We are a big power, and we're going to show ourselves that we're a big power. And that goes right back to Ernest Bevin, who was the Foreign Secretary in 1947, and he was hauled in by the American ambassador, and he was given a great ticking off because the two spies had been found, one in Aldermaston and one somewhere else, two Russian spies, Soviet spies, and the Americans said to Ernest Bevin that you're an unreliable ally, you're not secure, we will not give you any further nuclear information at all. That's what the ambassador said. Bevin was a simple trade union leader, rather right-wing. He got furious. He went straight back to Downing Street, where, unhappily, Attlee was meeting some senior civil servants, and the civil servants were saying to Attlee, we don't afford, we can't afford nuclear weapons, we should stop having nuclear weapons, we should not start beginning nuclear weapons. And that was Attlee's own sympathy. Attlee said after, within a month of the bombs dropping, in his private memoirs, he said, these weapons make war impossible. They must be abolished. And when Ernest Bevin came in the room, he heard the way the thing was going, and he said, I don't care what they cost, I want them over here with a bloody great Union Jack on top. And that is the fundamental down-to-earth reason why we've got these things, because we are very important and we would be insignificant in the world if we didn't have them. It's childish, but it's actually, it's deep down. That's what these people are all about. What are the reasons for justifying Trident? Well, the one reason that it's meant to be is completely fallacious, I think. We're told, the man on the radio said, does anybody hear this broadcast this afternoon, Sheffield Radio? He said, but how, we would be defenceless without having nuclear weapons. I said, really? How do they defend people? How do you use them? How can you use them without actually yourself suffering from what you're doing? It's like pointing a pistol at your own head and saying, if you dare take a step forward, I'll blow my own head off. It's just about as intelligent as that. But the dogma that they defend is somehow there, and you've got to analyze it. What does it defend us against? Well, if you're talking to a Conservative MP, you'll be told that that we never know what the future holds. Well, how clever. How more profound can you get than that? It's called the future. But anyway, they mean that somehow the North Koreans will wish to invade Scotland or something or other, or Essex or whatever, if we don't have nuclear weapons. That's the kind of... I think that's ridiculous. The real threats we face are quite obvious. There's all kinds of physical threats, there's health threats, there's climate change threats, all of which are real things that we can do something about, practically speaking. If we continue as we are with nuclear weapons, I do not see how we can possibly address ourselves to the Iranians or to any other country that might want nuclear weapons and say, you can't have them, but we're going to have them as long as we feel like. Because renewing Trident means nuclear weapons for another 35 years in this country. We have a moment of history now to decide not to. So the worst scenario to me is that a terrorist group gets hold of nuclear weapons or a nuclear weapon. What do we do then? You can't even use traditional deterrence language against a terrorist with nuclear weapons. And the country that's most volatile and most dangerous is Pakistan, because Pakistan is a very strong Al-Qaeda group in Pakistan, and Pakistan's got nuclear weapons. And what do you do when a country with nuclear weapons falls into the hands of people who are suicidal? You know, it's just ridiculous. You can't guarantee everything in life, but the idea that we're suddenly going to be invaded by North Korea, to me, is about one out of 99 possibilities. There are many much more serious matters, and I'm sure if the North Koreans wanted to come here, they wouldn't be bothered whether they had Trident or not. They must be off their heads if they wanted to attempt an attack like that. So I think there's very little argument, and I think I always say nuclear weapons make us more insecure than secure. That's what we're doing, is spending a lot of money to become more insecure. At a time, and this is why it's so much easier to argue this now than it was in the 80s, because in the 80s, people were not cutting this and that and the other and all that, all these social services being cut, library cuts, national accident and emergency wards being cut, all these things wasn't happening then. It's happening now, and people know very well what it means, the bedroom tax, the lack of carers and all these things that are happening, library cuts, they're there. And I've, on this tour, I've had absolutely no problem in talking to people and saying, would you sooner have £100 billion spent on the National Health Service and education or have it on nuclear weapons? There's no argument. There really is no argument. They unanimously, they're in favor of spending on the National Health Service. So in a way, it's an open door. I don't think people realize this yet. We can all take polls. There have been polls about it showing up 30% at the most want nuclear weapons. But it's not an issue yet. We've got to make it an issue. That's the issue, really, to make it an issue. And that's why I'm glad to be with you tonight. There are so many things we can actually do, all of us. It's not some remote thing that some wizard is going to somehow change public opinion. First of all, the conviction that public opinion changes. And it does change on all sorts of things. And we forget it. People say, there's nothing I can do about things. Every social change that to the benefit of humanity in this country has come about because a few people have actually cared and worked for it. Anybody here, there's one or two white heads around like my own, old age pension, very nice to get. It wasn't an accident. It was fought for 10 years by people who really put their heart and soul into it, 1898 to 1908. Same with the National Health Service. If I remember the BMA, am I correct? The BMA was actually opposed to the National Health Service at the time, but people who wanted it campaigned for it. Some changes are almost unnoticed. I mean, I'm sure you couldn't smoke here anyway, but if you wanted to smoke, you'd have to go out in the street. It's completely different from the atmosphere that I grew up in when everybody smoked. I was a heavy smoker for 40-something years, but I stopped, thank God. But it was the culture of smoking, and now the culture's completely changed. And we have to change that culture, that peace is not maintained by threatening other people with mass murder. That is not the way to make peace. It's not what we do in our ordinary streets. Where I am, I've got a little street of about 50 houses, probably two families in each. Well, we don't all love each other. Some of us quite positively dislike each other. But the idea that if a man parks on the double yellow line outside my house, that I'd pick up a shotgun and blow his head off would be very unusual. And indeed, if I did, there'd be 999 ringing all around London, and I'd be carted away to Pentonville or somewhere quite properly. We have mechanisms for dealing with people who are out of order. The lady who plays loud music on a Sunday afternoon, to my great fury, I've never thought of popping a hand grenade through the window, because you couldn't actually get a hand grenade if you wanted to. We've got restrictions on armaments held by individuals in our society. Quite right. The world, however, is highly militarized, and weapons are awash around the place. So we've got to think about a different form of security altogether, I think, and persuade people that Trident doesn't give them any security. Well, who are the agencies that we can actually help to use? Well, list some of the political parties. We have the smaller parties committed to getting rid of nuclear weapons. The Green Party, the Scottish National Party, Plaid, all opposed to nuclear weapons. The three major parties, this down here, Conservative Party, Labour Party, and Lib Dems. The Conservative Party is right back into the bloody great Union Jack mentality. Maybe there are some exceptions. There have been in the past. Enoch Powell was against nuclear weapons, but on the whole, they're loyal to that particular flag-waving affair. Lib Dems, I don't know. There may be Lib Dems here. God bless you and good luck. But what the Lib Dems actually think about this issue is not at all clear. The Labour Party is like a large lump of jelly. It's pink. It's true, vaguely pink, not very pink, but vaguely pink, and it's wobbling. It's wobbling. It's waiting to set. And that's where we've got to actually concentrate, whether you're in the Labour Party or not. I'm not in the Labour Party, but that's some sort of hope. Their present manifesto says that they want to keep an independent British nuclear deterrent. It's not independent. That's rubbish. We get the missiles from America anyway. But that's what they say in their thing. Well, there's a lot of people working within the Labour Party and on the Labour Party to try and change that more positively. And I think the more we can show them that votes are to be gained by spending money on health rather than nuclear weapons, the better. Churches. Actually, churches have been quite remarkable on this, because all the major churches have said positive things against the renewal of Trident. To my own amazement, my own church, the Catholic Church, the bishops actually said 5 years ago that all nuclear weapons should be decommissioned. Well, that's the most radical thing so far. I don't think they quite understood what they were saying, but they said it. So I'm holding it to them all over the place. I said at the time, why didn't you mention Trident? Oh, said the bishop, because I wanted to include all British nuclear weapons. Well, actually, there was only one British nuclear weapon. It was Trident at the time, but I didn't like to rub his nose in it too much. He said it. They decommissioned. And the Methodists have produced one of the best documents on Trident going. And I recommend you to get it, 25 Marylebone Road, London, NW1. You get it in bulk and send it around. It should be in the back of every single church. Something about this issue. But I've been to lots of churches. I've never heard a sermon where it's mentioned. I've never seen a church notice board where any of those notices outside are stuck up. I've never had any reference to it. So there's a lot to be done there. People of goodwill, but they just are kept ignorant, or somehow they're kept ignorant. development agencies. I think one of the great scandals at the moment is that the major development agencies, War on Want as an exception, there may be other exceptions, but the big ones don't like to talk about the militarization of our globe, and they certainly don't like to talk about Trident. And yet, how could you really raise money for a project in Botswana or Pakistan, or raise money and beg and beg and not take into account the enormous sums of money that are going on the militarization of our planet? I'm not asking him to campaign on these things, but just to mention it, that's all, would be enough to help. And they have an enormous constituency, millions of people, quite rightly, sympathetically and generously helping these things. So go to your local Oxfam shop with a Trident poster and say, would you like to put this up in the window? See what happens. You'll get a no. But then an argument will start, or a discussion will start, and it could be have a positive result in the end. So churches, development agencies, political parties, local media. I've been to so many places where I've asked a group like this, I'm not going to ask you because it's embarrassing, how many people have actually written a letter to their local paper within the last 2 months, making the connection between the money on Trident and social cuts. Honestly, if one hand goes up, that's a bonus. Normally, no hands go up. Nobody. Local papers are there wide open to be used. And if you write a short letter, come up the front, the cheap seats are up here. If you write a short letter, which is locally attached, you're mentioning some issue that's local, and make this, it'll probably get in. It's a good chance of getting in. A short and polite letter is even more chance if you put after your name in brackets, 16 years old, unbrackets. But maybe you can't do that. But your consciences are probably stricter than mine. I wouldn't hesitate. But anyway, you've got to tell you. The religious press is all sitting around doing this, that, and the other. We had canonizations galore this week. Well, how about a canonization on a real canon, i.e. the canon of Trident, the firing of Trident? Some issue in religious papers, they're all there. Don't confine it to religious papers. What about the Pigeon Fancier? It's a lovely magazine called The Pigeon Fancier. You write and say, I'm sorry to hear that the pigeons are running out of food and so on. So much more useful if we weren't spending money on Trident, we could all afford pigeon food, you know, so. Anything, you can always make a connection if you want to. The Radio 4 people are utterly fed up with me because I ring up almost every day and say, excuse me, but did you know that Trident... Yes, Bruce, we've heard that. Thank you for the phone down. Keep it going. This is my last effort to stir people up. This is the current petition on Trident. It's got 20 slots in it. I'm going to hope that we'll all take one. They're on the table outside. I hope you'll all take one on the way out. I don't want you to sign it. On the contrary, I want you to take it away and get 20 signatures. That will mean 20 discussions with 20 people about the issue. That's the important thing. A lady did sign one copy and gave it back to me. I said, Madam, I'm sorry, you've missed the idea. Take it away again and get 19 signatures. Oh, me? I said, yes, you dear. Off you go. And she went off. I hope she'll do it. There's a good way of getting people to think about things. And the other event that is coming up, the 11th of June, there's a lobby of Parliament, which is a great opportunity to get your Member of Parliament issue on this, talking about this issue. And you only got to write to him or her in Westminster and say, I'd like to talk to you for 10 minutes about Trident on the 11th of June at some time to your convenience. Please let me know when you're able to see me. And most of them, if you're a constituent, that they'll be willing to see you because they know you represent a number of other people, not just yourself. So come down and take part in the lobby. You could think of other things to do. You're wearing a badge. Someone gave me this massive, great badge. I've never seen such a large badge. But anyway, I wear this now on the trip because someone presented it with me and I didn't have one. I think I'm reminded now of the American story of the preacher who was asked to speak for 20 minutes. And at 20 minutes, he was still in full flight. And he went on. And at half an hour, he was still in full flight. 40 minutes, he was still at it. He said, my dear brethren, he said, this reminds me of another text and so on. So people go, oh, I like this. And he said, my dear brethren, what more can I say? The voice from the back of the church said, try amen. So that's my amen. I hope you have a little discussion now, and let's have a discussion together about these issues. Thank you very much for listening. There we are.
I'll let them talk. I'll talk to you, dear.
And okay, so you just talk amongst yourselves about the issues. Is that the idea? Yes.